This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by Farrah.com. There's a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So, let's find out what's trending.
What's trending on Planet Sawant?
So, not content with ruining her own district in Seattle, Shama Sawant wants to install up to 40 tiny home villages and even transitional tent encampments all across the city of Seattle.
Yeah, it's tiresome, especially this move, because we didn't have a place to go. One of these days, somebody might just come up to us and donate some land and be like, bam, here you guys go. No more needing to move, and that'd be awesome.
Well, I mean, or you can take us up on offers of resources to go into shelters and then get into programs that are going to give you job skills or any mental health treatment that you might need or medical assistance that you might need. Maybe it's all about giving you some money so you can get on a bus and go back to a community that maybe you're away from. Or I guess we can just give you land and you can camp out and waste away. I mean, I guess we could do that. Doesn't really make sense to me, but okay. Now, right now in the city of Seattle, you can only have up to 3 of these tiny home villages, though the city doesn't really follow the law.
Why shouldn't the city expand the solutions that have been proven to work? We don't want people to be in tents or on the streets unprotected. So this is an actual solution.
So there's something about Sawant's voice there that says proven to work. And she almost says that as if we have actual data to suggest that tiny home villages are proven to work. Only they're not proven to work. That's just not true. I'm not wholly against the idea of tiny home villages, but let's be clear. When she tells Como TV there that these things work, what she doesn't tell you is the truth, which is we don't know if they work. Because they don't track the folks long term, so we don't know if they end up getting back into the streets. This is too new of a system, so don't tell me that it works. I covered the story exclusively on this show of a guy who was homeless. He's been homeless off and on for several decades. He's dealing with a heroin addiction problem. He moves into the tiny home village in Seattle in South Lake Union, and he discovers, oh my gosh, this is not a good place for me. There is rampant drug use being done here. There is drug dealing happening just right next door. There are people making loud noises. They're leaving their drug paraphernalia all over the place, including blood all over the place. He had to leave. Didn't work for him. Here's a woman who's homeless. Lives in a tiny home village. It would appear it's not working for her either.
It's absolutely frustrating. Yeah. Especially when 3 months turns into a year. I'm being pressured to find housing and to move out. Although that's one of their roles, is to help me find housing. So it's a bit contradictory there.
That's weird. I heard it works, all of this. Now, again, I'm not against the idea on paper of tiny home villages. I think they make sense in a lot of cases, but they don't make sense, for example, across the street from a school. They don't make sense, for example, smack in the middle of a densely populated residential area. They don't make sense when they're low barrier, and they're all low barrier. They might not call them low barrier, but when you allow people to do drugs, to drink alcohol on the premises, that makes it low barrier. That seems problematic if you've got someone whose reason behind being left out on the streets, living in parks, living on sidewalks, if the reason they're there is because they've got a heroin addiction that isn't actually being treated, probably doesn't make sense to give them a tiny home where they're still going to have access to the heroin. Because then it turns out, I know that this is crazy, it turns out you're not addressing the root cause, and thus they're going to continue falling into that cycle of what led them to living out on the streets in the first place. To allow them to be put up virtually anywhere with up to 100 people, 40 of these in the city of Seattle, makes no sense. Now, weirdly, I don't think it's going to come up like across the street from Shama Sawant's apartment or home. Something tells me Mike O'Brien, council member, who is an utter disgrace, who's being run out of the council, something tells me this thing isn't going to pop up right across the street from his very, very nice big house. Something tells me this isn't going to impact anyone except, I'm guessing, South Lake Union, because there are a lot of tech bros who live there. This is absolutely the wrong way to do it. I'm fine having a more nuanced conversation on the importance of this and maybe having a more detailed, in-depth conversation about where these make the most sense. I'd love to have that conversation, but that's not what Shama Sawant does. She is in a position right now where she is desperate to stay on the council. We played the audio for you yesterday. She pretended that the reason why she got so little support, despite having the highest name recognition in all of Seattle as far as politicians go, she's all like, well, I wasn't really running against real progressives, and they were just tricking people. That is absurd. She's not very good at what she does beyond being an ambassador for her own personal brand. And this is another reflection of it. No details, just, oh, it works. We should do more of it. She's not able to tell you how it works. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Let's get political.
So this is an important story for folks to pay attention to. And it's going to be the subtext of everything moving forward as it relates to the 2020 election. Because going into the midterm elections just a couple years ago, Democrats didn't get the big blue wave that they wanted. But they certainly saw some very significant wins. There's no doubt about it that it was more positive, clearly more positive than Republicans will admit. But at the time, when you looked at public polling available, specifically from the Pew Research Center, it showed that actually at that time, Democrats had a high number of favorables. Their favorability rating was high. And a lot of that, of course, was driven, at least in large part, to the general distaste with the president, on top of the fact that, again, historically, when you've got a president in power, they're not going to be able to keep all branches of the government on their side. We like a little bit of a divided government. We like it because of the checks and balances. Okay. The polling has shifted. That same poll that showed Democrats having a favorability rating that was high now shows the exact opposite. It's flipped. It's now 45-52. That means only 45% of those polled, in a general sense of what do you think about Democrats, only 45% were favorable, 52% were unfavorable. It's the same for the GOP right now. What does this mean? Really simply, this is what happens when progressive ideas are put on full display. Because you've got some relatively moderate views coming from Joe Biden. That is his strongest characteristic of that campaign, is he's perceived as relatively moderate. And when you compare him to the other voices out there on that debate stage or at the town halls for climate change, he comes off even more moderate. But he's flanked by a dozen other candidates. A dozen that are absolutely insane. They're nuts. They hold positions that are far outside of the mainstream, and they're getting so much coverage because there's so many of them. Let's say you give 2 minutes equally to every single candidate in a given NBC nightly news bit. Let's live in that pretend world. Well, that's 2 minutes for moderate Joe, and then a lot of 2 minute segments on all the other crazy people for them to go out there and say, hey, we want to ban air travel and burgers. We want to take away your private health insurance. We want heroin injection sites. We want to mandate electric cars. We want to give reparations. We want to give a handout and get rid of all the debt for college students. We want to impose the big S word, socialism, and we're not going to pretend that it's a bad word. We're going to fully embrace it. We're going to go after Amazon.com and other greedy, evil, big businesses that you all work for. And at the same time, all those tax cuts that you've been the beneficiary of, we want to take them away. It turns out when you've got all of them on display, so passionately argued, it kind of turns off a whole bunch of people. It certainly turns off the moderate Democrats who are already uncomfortable with the direction of this party. It's going to turn off the independents who sometimes vote Republican, sometimes vote Democrat. They're going to be like, oh, I don't want anything to do with that. That's a little too crazy. And then all of a sudden, the people who look at what's going on, whomever the candidate is on the Democratic side, is going to be the symbolic head of the crazy. So let's say you're just some independent voter. Maybe you live in Washington, maybe you live in Oregon, but more importantly, you probably live in Florida or Ohio, New Hampshire, Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin. You're somewhere down the middle, and these are swing states that you live in. And you're going to say, okay, I don't really like the rhetoric coming from Trump. Don't like it. It's nasty. I don't like his tweets. I don't like the perception of chaos because he keeps firing people that work for his administration. But beyond that, generally, I kind of like where I am. I'm making more money than I did before. Maybe this person didn't have a job before, but now has a job. Or maybe someone who doesn't have a job finally feels some semblance of hope because the unemployment rate is going so low. People have made more money, not just in tax savings, right? where take-home pay is much higher now. But we've seen a general increase in the average hourly wage all across the country. They're going to say, okay, I kind of like that stuff. Man, I really hate this whole idea. I like my health insurance that I worked really hard for. And now I'm working somewhere where I actually get health insurance that matters to me. Man, I like the fact that I'm getting higher take-home pay because of the tax cuts. I like the fact that I'm working for a company that is using those tax cuts to go ahead and double down in investments in this community. All of a sudden, they're saying, you know what? I don't want to give up eating burgers. I don't want to drive an electric car. I like my Ford. I guess I'll just hold my nose and vote for Trump. That's why this matters. And it's not going to get that much coverage in the media. This will get us a couple stories here or there today, maybe tomorrow, maybe over the weekend, but this is going to be forgotten. And this is why we spend so much time highlighting the crazy policies of the left. Every time they're on CNN or MSNBC or highlighted in the New York Times, this is good news for Republicans. If they held mainstream views, we wouldn't be worried. We would be scared like crazy, okay? But they don't. They hold crazy views. And it's dragging the favorabilities down. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Don't forget, you can follow me on Instagram. Fire up that Instagram app. Search for the screen name Jason Rantz, J-S-O-N-R-A-N-T-Z. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in King County?
So John Solomon over at the Aspen Institute, along with some help from the University of Washington, they did a study in which they said less than 1 in 5 kids in King County goes outside to play for at least an hour a day, something the county recommends to keep your kids healthy. So go outside and play, enjoy the outdoors, get physical, do some running, do all that sort of stuff. Whatever it is, should happen at least 1 hour a day. They're saying less than 1 in 5 kids actually does that. And because we can't look at stories anymore without it through a political lens, without it through a social justice lens, the Seattle Times says that this group claims it's because of, quote-unquote, systemic barriers, which doesn't really mean anything, like in the real world. But when you look at it through the view of whether or not you're woke, then it means a whole lot of stuff. Because they're saying we're not woke enough. They say the reasons why so many kids aren't going outside is that we have implicit bias in Little League coaches, that we don't have enough bus services to go to green spaces, that we have too many signs and paperwork that are only in English. So in other words, what they're saying, kids aren't going outside because we don't embrace social justice causes, which isn't just false and ludicrous, but it doesn't address the actual root causes of all of this. And I'm willing to bet a lot of it is actually tied to family structure. I'm willing to bet that when you look at the data, it's going to say a lot having to do with family structure. Now, Julie McCleary is one of the researchers at the University of Washington that did this study. And she's quoted in the Seattle Times as saying, we did hear a lot in our focus groups about a cultural mismatch. Both not being able to navigate systems or field reservations or signing up for activities because it was in English, but also some confusion about how participation works in the United States. It's more of a separate system that one has to learn how to negotiate, and the system has some cultural biases built into it. So in other words, if you're not a Seattle-born citizen, a King County-born citizen, if you're someone who's foreign-born, man, you just don't know what you're doing. You can't read the language, and even if you could, you don't know how to negotiate. It's too confusing. That's what they're arguing. Now, this doesn't make sense on a whole host of issues, and I'm kind of curious as to what their sample size was, because King County is overwhelmingly white, and yet you're coming up with a stat that says 1 in 5 kids isn't going outside. So on the surface, it sounds like they are overrepresenting one group or another and underrepresenting another group. But let's move on from that, because the Seattle Times says children and families that don't speak English in the home were 3 times less likely to participate in organized sports. The study found immigrant families had a particularly difficult time navigating a system in which registration forms and scholarship information, if available, are only in English. Okay, so let's address that, because there's a root problem here, right? What's the root problem if they can't speak or read English? Here's a hint. That's the root problem. So why don't we go after that problem? Why don't we take this as an opportunity, not just to provide some help in navigating Like, I'm fine giving more resources to that, but how about we also talk about using this as an opportunity to talk about the benefits of learning the primary language of the country that you're living in, the state that you're living in, the county that you're living in. English is spoken in this county. You should probably learn it. Now, if you're unwilling to learn it because you just don't want to, well, then that's a you problem. Now, if you're in a position where you're trying to learn the language and you've got some kid who's going to school and is trying his best, okay, we should 100% accommodate and help, but why not also use this as an opportunity to say, yeah, probably a good idea to learn the language. You know, just a little bit. Because remember, they're talking about foreign-born folks who are coming here presumably legally, so they want to be here. Part of being here means learning the language. But you're not supposed to say that. That's decidedly not woke. Not supposed to do it. It's a microaggression. So in a case like this, here's the question. Is the goal to make it easier to not learn the language, or can there at least be a happy medium? I'd like it to be a little bit of a happy medium. And by the way, let's say you can't speak English or read English at all, and that's the true reason, even though I don't necessarily buy it, why the numbers are the way they are. Some kid who's maybe Hispanic, maybe comes here from Mexico or Guatemala or someone here from France or whatever it is. They come here and they really are passionate about soccer. And they try to sign up and they can't figure it out. But let's say we give them the sign up sheet in the language that they speak. There's also going to be a problem when you're out there trying to practice. Because unless the coach also speaks your language, aren't you then going to claim this in this study from the Aspen Institute? That, well, you know, we need more bilingual coaches. Isn't that the next spot that you're going to go into to try to explain away some of these numbers? How about this? Let's accommodate to a point, but not also make it so that you never have to learn the language. Again, I know that that's confusing to a lot of folks. I know we're not supposed to say that out loud, but that's the reality of the situation. Is it also possible that maybe the reason why a lot of these kids aren't going outside is if you are from a family that is lower income, you likely are less likely to afford to be able to do virtually anything. That maybe you don't have two parents in the household every single night who can maybe supervise some of this stuff. Doesn't that have something to do with it? It's not saying that there's not a problem, and it's not saying that it's the kid's fault. But when we immediately jump to, oh, well, you're not checking off the progressive lists on that progressive checklist there. Are all the signs in 22 different languages? Oh, well, if not, well, then that's the reason. Maybe it's also that it has nothing to do with getting on a bus and going to a green space. There's plenty of green space everywhere. And I'm sorry, there's a story in the news today. To be fair, it's bunk. But there's a Wallet Hub survey that says King County Metro is the best in the entire country. If that is true, it's not. But let's just say it is. You mean to tell me you can't find bus service to a park? Where do people live? There are parks everywhere in Seattle. I know we hear some of those crazy people saying, oh my God, that lightning struck that tree. And we pretty much don't have any trees. Like, there's no trees anywhere. Seriously, no. And you don't have to go to a park to go outside and play. You don't have to go to a park. And if all of this is just talking about we need to get more people outside, can I make a suggestion here? Would that be okay? Is that cool?
Yeah, okay. I approve.
Thank you. If the park, let's say, is 10 minutes away by foot, have the kid walk there and walk with them. And that goes to your 60 minutes of outside time. So that's 20 minutes round trip. Go maybe a little bit of a longer way. Or how about this? Let's say you don't live anywhere near a park. Just hang out with your kid. Take them outside. Go for walks in the neighborhood. You don't have to go to a park. You don't have to go to a baseball diamond or soccer pitch to enjoy the other. You can do so many things that... Go walk around the block multiple times. If you're actually talking to your son or daughter, if you're engaged with them, if you're actually asking them how their day went, it's not going to be as boring as you might think. Now, maybe for you, because, you know, your kids can be kind of boring, right? Yeah. I mean, there's that. But that here, I just solved everything. Write that down. Write that down in the book that says Jason solves the cities and counties problem. Behind the Prediction book. That's the list of people I hate. That's the biggest one. Just push that aside. Okay, there you go. Thank you. Write that down. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation. The NumBetter Tax Resolution Hotline.
Olympia, Sammamish, Lakewood, Bellevue.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Ranch Show.
Bellingham, Kirkland, Z-Town.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at the time. It's 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the Big Local. It's brought to you by Sean Keller Smiles by Design. The Big Local, the concept, really, really simple to understand. The media is hyper-focused on the city of Seattle, so they spend almost all of their time talking about stories out of Seattle. So instead of doing that, we do the opposite. We ignore the city of Seattle, and we spend all of our time talking about the communities that you live in and care about most. And we start in Snohomish, where their youth soccer club was vandalized yet again. Earlier in the year, we talked with someone from the club, and now they're in the exact same position with some loser crooks trashing their office, stealing clothing, stealing electronics, and they keep getting targeted. Why?
It's a good question. I don't know. We have no idea, because, I mean, we've done nothing wrong here. We're just trying to help out our community. And it's the kids. I mean, when you steal from a nonprofit, like, kids organization like this, you're stealing from the kids at this point.
Yeah, you're stealing directly from the kids. That's Coach Michael Mikulski talking with Q13.
It's hard because it's just one thing after another right now. It's unbelievable that people would just keep continuing to do this just because we're vulnerable.
So here's the problem. When you're vulnerable, degenerate losers will take advantage of that, and they'll go after you, and they don't care about the kids. Now, in this case, the club is looking to install a security system that's going to cost them even more money that they don't necessarily have. That money could have gone to these kids, but instead, it's going to install a system. This happens in a region that lacks a respect for the rule of law. We talk about the city we're not supposed to talk about in this segment in one way. Bad policies in the city of Seattle tend to spread. And the attitudes tend to spread. And so if you see bad guys getting away with things in Seattle, they're going to start saying, hey, I'm in Snohomish. I'm in Federal Way. I live in Auburn and Puyallup. I bet you I can get away with it. So let's dip our toes in the water and see how much we can get away with. And unfortunately, despite the fact that I think Snohomish County in general has their stuff together as it relates to going after these people from a policing perspective, they can't be everywhere all the time. And something like this happens. And so I feel awful for these kids who just want to play soccer. That's literally all they want to do. They're passionate about something. And let me tell you, when your passion comes under siege like this, even in this generally disconnected way, none of the kids are directly being hurt, but they're indirectly being hurt because you are going after their club. And all of this sort of stuff, they start to talk about. Parents have to have the conversations with their kids about why these types of horrible things are happening in their community. It's not a good place to be. So we hope that they find these losers who decided to do it. And let's be clear, no one accidentally targeted these kids. They knew when they decided to break into this club that specifically for kids, they knew that kids were going to be hurt in the process. And I'm guessing that when you find out who did this, we're going to find out one of two things, if not both. They're either going to be homeless or drug addicts or both. This is what happens when you have a drug issue that's out of control. They break into things, they steal things, they sell those things, then they use the money to purchase their drug of choice. There was a study that was done, and we talked very briefly. I talked about it with someone yesterday, something along the lines of it costs like $30,000 a year to feed a habit. Where do you think these people are getting the money? They're breaking into the Snohomish Youth Soccer Club. They're stealing electronics, they're selling them, and then they're buying drugs. Meanwhile, in Port Orchard, hey, they're getting ready for the tiny home village that we told you about, what, six, seven weeks ago? We said it was coming. Now they're getting to work on it. Q13 says, recent data collected from a homeless count taken in January found that there were at least 173 people living unsheltered and on the streets of Kitsap County. That's a 16% increase since 2018. Kitsap County Commissioner Charlotte Garrido tells Q13 why the numbers are the way that they are.
An affordable way to create housing quickly and help people begin to redevelop their sense of security and self-worth, as well as a sense of community. We found that increasing rent was the single largest driver of homelessness and putting people out of their homes.
That's nonsense. That's 100% nonsense. I know the ACLU wants to do the same exact thing. They blame the cost of living. in this Q13 story, they say, according to the ACLU of Washington, for every $100 increase in rent, homelessness rises by 32% in rural areas and 6% in metro areas. That is absolute nonsense. That is what they use to justify dismantling these big businesses that are behind some of the developments in all of these cities. That is absolutely ridiculous. How do we know? Put yourself in that position. Let's say right now, your rent is $1,200 a month, okay? And you know that going to $1,300, that's just too much for you. Okay, what happens when you get hit with that $1,300 a month rent? What happens? Do you just immediately become homeless? What would you do? Well, you have the opportunity to move into another neighborhood that you can afford. You have the opportunity to move in with family members who might be able to support you. You have the opportunity to take on a roommate or two. That makes it a lot easier. You don't immediately go homeless, right? There's someplace else you can go. So does that actually make sense to you? Producer Peyton, if they raised your rent that you pay right now by $3,000, let's go all in, do you automatically become homeless?
Probably not.
No, of course not. So you're to tell me, Kitsap County and ACLU of Washington, that automatically you just raise it by $100, people are out on the street. That doesn't make any sense. I know that folks will push back on the left and say, well, that's your privilege. Just because it doesn't impact you doesn't mean it doesn't impact anybody else. I'm sorry, common sense says what you're saying is wrong. Common sense says what you're saying is wrong. Here's another person who's pushing this nonsense. Doug Washburn, Kitsap County Director of Human Services.
We need to make sure we're building not just for now or next year, for 5 years from 10 years from now. Because a lot of people are one paycheck away from losing that
house. I hear that all the time. People are one paycheck away from losing their home. And you know what? It just so happens that their fix to that is to demonize big business and tax businesses more. It's so weird that their solution to the problem that they're defining themselves happens to fall in line with an ideological position on taxing big business. Isn't that weird how that works? Isn't that just a little bit weird, just a little bit coincidental maybe? They're the ones defining the problem. And the answer to their problem that they're defining? Past the solutions that they have, the policy prescriptions that are driven by ideology that they have. Finally, Amazon is looking to hire 30,000 new jobs. We're talking about all kinds of jobs. We're talking about software engineers who earn over $100,000 a year. We're talking about warehouse staff paid at least $15 an hour to pack and ship online orders. And none of this is part of their seasonal hiring surges. This is how Amazon grows. The same company that ideologues all across the state of Washington, really all across the country, the company that they want to demonize as evil and greedy, and part of the problem, they're hiring 30,000 more people, giving them really high wages for decent work. Now, obviously, this is great news for the region, unless, of course, you're Seattle. They seem ready to expand into Bellevue. That's fantastic. This is great news for Bellevue. At the same time, we see that Amazon is opening a new distribution center at the Riverside Business Park Plaza in Northeast Everett. So now Everett is going to get this, according to the Amazon Herald, the Everett Herald. They say Amazon hasn't confirmed, but temporary signs that said "Welcome Amazonians" and "Amazonians start here" have been placed outside of the building. Port officials confirmed Amazon's occupancy. There's so much demonization going on. So much from so many very, very, very loud voices. But understand that they are keeping people in homes. Understand that they are giving people health insurance coverage. Understand they are giving people 401k and stock options. Understand that they are giving people a decent place to work. Yes, with some pressure, but with a really good wage. Whether we're talking about the $15 an hour person who's literally just putting stuff in boxes, which is not a high-skilled job, to the coders who are making it all possible. They are building communities. They are responsible not even just for the jobs that they're hiring, but all the indirect jobs. What happens when you bring 30,000 new jobs to one particular region, or even a portion of that? Construction costs go up because they're building more housing. What else? Coffee shops, restaurants, they start to go up. They start to get busier. They start to make more money. they start to hire more people. There is an impact that Amazon has that is all positive. Do not let the naysayers go after Amazon when this kind of growth is happening. This growth is good for our neighborhoods, our cities, our states, our communities, all across the country. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho live in the Online Trading Academy studio. Really do appreciate everyone tuning in and subscribing to the podcast. If you haven't done that yet, please text the keyword podcast to 1-800-465-8770 or just search for the Jason Rancho wherever it is you download podcasts. Now this is an insufferable media site that mostly posts stupid clickbait style videos on their Twitter feed. And they all want you to make become more aware of the fact that the term "hey guys" as a way to greet people is really, really dangerous and hurtful.
Hey guys, welcome back to Now This. Guys is a simple term.
Oh,
it could mean boys, or if you're modern,
hip, it
means people.
Oh.
At first glance, guys seems inviting, friendly, maybe warm, even comedic at times. But it, like many male default terms, should not be normalized as an all-encompassing phrase.
Oh. Guys, this is absolute...
Bro, you can't lead with that.
Dude, you can't say bro. That's a gendered word. You're not allowed to do that.
Come on, man. You can't say that.
No, you can't say man, my boy. You can't do that.
Why not, bro?
Oh, my God. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the exact kind of thing you're not supposed to do.
Well, you can't lead with
no,
hey
guys. No, you can't
do
it.
You led with hey guys.
Listen, sir, you need to stop. That is all gendered.
Bro, chill.
God, I've run out of gendered ways to say hello to people. This is ludicrous. This is crazy word policing. This indicates to me that we have no more problems in society. This is an example of us saying, you know what? Everything is relatively fine. We got some problems here or there, but they're, you know what? They're just minor. They're one-offs. They're small in numbers. Let's create a new way to create victims of people. Let's say you are being held down, not because of anything having to do with you, but because of the ignorance of the people who want to use a gendered way to talk about you.
Innocent as it may seem.
It is.
While we may understand the word means no real harm, with a deeper look, you'll understand that we've been ignoring the cognitive impact on women, as well as gender nonconforming folks,
by
only explicitly addressing the male identifying individuals.
You see, here's the deal. Like, people know what you mean. They know that when you say, hey guys, they know you don't mean anything bad. But still, even though they know that, you're really playing into gender stereotypes, and we really need to stop that. Like, that's just how it is. Like, oh my God and stuff. Like, I know, again, there's no nefarious intent. Yeah. But we like to word police because then it gives me something to do. They were all like, lady. And then I said, don't call me lady. And then they were all like, human. And then they were all like, don't call me human, man. And then they were like, person. And they said, you can't say person because that has son in it. Then they were all like, okay, whatever you want me to call you, please come up with some stupid video online. And I was all like, okay. And then I came up with it.
How is one to feel empowered to speak or assert themselves when upon greeting, they're misgendered or even ignored in language?
Oh, my God. I wish someone went up to her and said, you know what? I don't want to empower you to open up your mouth because everything that comes out of it is really dumb. You have nothing to offer to society whatsoever. Please shut up. How about that? Is that a good way to start the conversation? I won't even reference her at all. I'll just walk into the room. I'll look at her and be reminded that she posted that dumb video on Now This and say, good day, and just walk out of the room. Don't need anything with you. Here, apparently, when you said, hey, guys, to a group of people that included women, it's why that they were suppressed for all these years or something.
Can we be surprised that for decades, women often felt uncomfortable asserting their voice when we didn't even take the time to properly acknowledge them?
Oh, that must have been it. Okay, got it. I cannot wait for the person who's going to come out there and point out that this position is actually racist. Her position is racist because in certain languages, specifically Spanish, when you have a group of people, you go with the masculine, not the feminine pronouns. Now, I'm going to assume she's going to do a whole new video about how racist Spanish languages are. It's all racist. This whole idea of just like, listen to this one more time.
Can we be surprised that for decades, women often felt uncomfortable asserting their voice when we didn't even take the time to properly acknowledge them?
Do you really think by saying, hey, guys, there are any women out there who are truly, truly, truly uncomfortable? She says it in the video herself. We all know what it means. So if we all know what it means, why are we pretending that we need to change our language? So, for example, let me give you, I said it in this segment, I called them the word police. Because words matter, right? The word, she's the word police. Now, is there anyone who's listening to my voice right now who suggests, who thinks I'm suggesting that she's actually a police officer? Is there anyone out there who thinks legitimately that she is a police officer? She's got a badge, she's got some handcuffs, she's got a gun. She's going around and she is giving out tickets and arrest. Does anyone actually think that? No. You know why? Because you guys are not idiots. Because you understand that when I say word police, I'm using a metaphor. I'm using a common piece of language. Just like when someone walks into a room and if there's three women there, but 10 dudes, they're going to say, hey, guys, because guys is not actually gendered in that circumstance.
Bro, you said police, though.
Yeah, police.
It's got to be a real cop. They got to have handcuffs.
But dude, you said police. Isn't that, words matter. Words matter. What are you talking about? Words matter.
Yes, words matter. And there's no one who's complaining about this except for uber woke lunatics who want to justify their really bad hot takes. They went to colleges in which they got a liberal arts degree, which doesn't actually mean anything. It means literally nothing. Then you went out and you find yourself working for some .com like BuzzFeed that vomits out this kind of nonsense day in and day out because you want to be able to change society in some way. You're not going to do anything meaningful, so you target this sort of... I almost cussed. I almost said a bad word. You cover this nonsense like this. I was going to say chicken bleep, which is exactly what this is. God, I hate... go on my computer in my office. Block now this on my Twitter feed. I don't want to see any of this crap. And to be fair, it was Michael Knowles from the Daily Wire that pointed this out. Ugh. 1-800-465-8770.